This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. A recent court case denied a father's application for his son to be declared a Malaysian. It ruled that because the child was illegitimate and that the mother was a non-citizen from Thailand, the child was thus considered a Thai national by virtue of a Thai citizenship law. Here to explain why being born in Malaysia to a Malaysian father does not qualify you for automatic citizenship is lawyer Datuk Dr. Gudiel Singh Nijau. Welcome, Datuk. How are you today?
Yes, I'm fine, thank you.
So, why is the child not considered a citizen by virtue of being born here?
The general provision is that if a person is born after Merdeka Day, of one of whose parents is a citizen, he becomes a citizen by operation of law. But he follows either parent. But in the case of an illegitimate child, a child born out of wedlock, the situation changes because he cannot follow the citizenship of his father. Mm-hmm. Only his mother's citizenship is considered. Now, and so the problem arises, the social problem that arises is because there are a large number of people, I believe, of the underclass who marry foreigners who come into this country, either as legal or illegal immigrants. And then their marriage peters out, and then the wife disappears into someplace else. You know, it could be Indonesia, Bangladesh, Myanmar, Thailand, and so on. And then the child has grown up here all these years. He is 10, 11, 12 years old. And he's not given the citizenship of his father because his father is still resident here. The child is resident here and continues to live here. And most critically, he's denied certain fundamental rights, one of which is education. So a child goes through, there are children 11, 12 years old who have no right to education as such.
Say in the case of this boy, the one that I mentioned, you know, what does his birth certificate actually say?
I'm not familiar with his birth certificate because it was a decision of the High Court affirmed by the Court of Appeal as recently as March this year. Because of the fact that they had to follow the nationality of the mother. In that case, it was clear that the mother was a Thai citizen because that is what was adverted to in the court proceedings itself. So in that case, perhaps it's not as problematic as situations where a person travels to this country either as a legal or illegal immigrant, the mother, for example, and then she disappears, she leaves the country. And how do you establish, just because she came in on a particular passport, does that mean that she is therefore a citizen of that country? Mm-hmm. And even if she's a citizen of that country, what is the status of a child born out of wedlock in that particular country? Now, this has to be established as a matter of fact through evidence. Unfortunately, these cases that have been appearing before the courts, and some are pending before the courts, I think there is no effort made to establish through facts, which means through evidence, the status of this particular child, even if he's born of a parent who, of a mother who holds a foreign passport. So this is the first hurdle that's expressed. The second hurdle, of course, is what do you do with these children? You know, what kind of rights do you accord to them? So this is where I think the court has to look beyond just the black letter of the federal constitution and begin to either shape some kind of remedy or else to indicate some kind of indicate a remedy that perhaps Parliament could enact through an amendment of the constitution.
So just speaking about the constitution, for someone who's not familiar, what does it say exactly about citizenship?
Well, it says, like I said, first is that if a child is born after Merdeka Day, one of his parents is a citizen, then he becomes automatically a citizen by operation of law. Mm-hmm. So this is on the basis of birth, where he's born. But then there is another provision which says that if he's illegitimate, then you have an added provision, which is that it follows the lineage, which means it follows the mother's lineage, which means it follows the mother's nationality. Over and above this is a provision which says that if as a result of, if a person is born in this country and he would be stateless because they do not know what nationality, what citizenship rights he has, then he's born stateless. So you cannot have a stateless person because he's nothing. He cannot enjoy any rights. He cannot have a passport. He cannot move around. He cannot have an IC.
Cannot go to school.
Cannot go to school and so on. So all this plethora of rights will be denied to him. So
healthcare as well, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And there is a provision in our constitution which says that he will then, if he's born in this country after Merdeka Day, and if he's going to be rendered stateless because they cannot ascertain his citizenship, then he becomes a citizen by operation of law, by virtue of the fact that he's born in this country after Merdeka Day.
So in this case, because the boy is considered illegitimate, right? His parents didn't get married. And as you mentioned in court, the mother was said to be a Thai national. Isn't the case settled then? I mean, what case does the father actually have in fighting this case?
Well, I'm looking at it beyond this particular case itself and looking at the kind of problems that are being created for this group of children. You see, we are also a party to a treaty called the Convention on the Right of the Child, mm-hmm. where in all situations, the government agencies should consider the paramount interest of the child as their focus when determining anything that could affect a child adversely. So although that treaty, our government had some reservations about this treaty, the fact remains that at least government agencies and even courts, for example, should be mindful of the fact that we are a treaty and therefore there is a legitimate expectation of someone who moves the court that government agencies will have regard to at least our international obligations and consider the paramount interest of the child. Because in this case, what happens? The child is now rendered invisible as a person. And they are children. The case pending in Penang is three children. I think it's 8, 9 and 11 years old. Now, they are being allowed to have education depending upon the discretion of somebody, and then they have to move out. And then someone else suggests that they cannot continue because they are citizens. Now, what becomes of this a growing group of children, especially considering that we have a large number of immigrants who come into this country, some legal, some illegal, some in respect of whom amnesty is given later and they therefore become legal, but who, because, for example, before the amnesty, they are illegal, they dare not declare themselves or go through a marriage ceremony through the official registration department. And so the children become illegitimate. So I think this is a concern that has to be addressed by the powers that be on a fairly urgent basis.
Why is a mother's nationality given more importance in our citizenship laws?
Well, I think the logic behind it, and I'm just second-guessing this situation, is because usually the mother is attached to the child. She has given birth to the child. Someone can come and have a relationship with the mother. It could be a temporary relationship. It could be a permanent relationship. But the mother is the one who has the immediate link to the child and is expected to continue with this link.
I'm speaking today to Dr. Gurdiel Singhija about a father's plight to get his 6-year-old son recognized as a Malaysian citizen. I'll ask Dr. Gurdiel how he would like to see our citizenship laws amended after this quick break. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture and I'm Juliet Jacobs. My guest today is lawyer Dr. Gurdiel Singhija and we're talking about the case of a father trying to get his son recognised as a citizen of Malaysia. Now, the boy's parents were not married at the time of his birth and Malaysian laws give primacy to the mom's nationality, which happens to be Thai. She has since disappeared and the father raised the boy in Malaysia since his birth in 2010. But further complicating matters is the fact that the father reportedly has a heart condition and doctors have told him he does not have long to live. I know you are not involved with this case directly, Dr. Gurdiel, but just talking about the child themselves, what happens to the child next?
Well, I mean, you know, what it means is this child, I think, has been living in this country for all intents and purposes. He's a cultured in Malaysian life. his father's lineage, his father's parents with whom he lives is also are also Malaysian. So now what it practically means is this child will now have to, because he'll have no rights here, no right of education, to health services, he becomes invisible for all purposes, he'll have to now to be transported to Thailand and then live his life out in Thailand. His mother has abandoned him. So he is going to be an international pariah, if you like. And this is the kind of situation, the kind of complexities that I think the court and maybe the legislator should begin to examine, because the court, in fairness to them, the Court of Appeal in this particular case, they just looked at it very in a linear fashion. They looked at a provision. They said if he's a legitimate, then it's the mother. The mother is a Thai national. End of story. But then you see, we are also parties to the Convention on the Right of the Child, which says all agencies, government agencies, therefore logically should also consider the paramount interests of the child. You cannot visit the sins of the parents on the child. I mean, what do you do with this child? And there are a large number of children like this in view of the fact that we have a large immigrant, migrant population, some legitimate, some illegitimate, some of whom have been given amnesty, so they have been legitimized. And before they were legitimized, a lot of these people who had relationships with the Malaysians, Malaysian fathers, Malaysian men, would not dare to go and register themselves because, you know, then they'll be caught out as illegal immigrants. So I think this is a real problem, social problem that is being caused because of the kind of the interface with other policies that we have with regard to immigration, with regard to labor laws, and so on and so forth. So I think either the court now has to begin to take into account more dynamic, creative mode to arrive at some kind of a solution, or else they could make a recommendation in their judgments that this kind of problem needs to be addressed by the legislature, and hopefully this will be taken up by the legislature then to amend the constitution to deal with this. I must add that, of course, you can apply for citizenship by registration. But you see, this again is in a limbo. There are a large number of cases where people have been waiting years and years to be registered. And, you know, some receive sympathetic consideration, some don't. But what in practically what it means is that the child is really rendered stateless because he cannot apply for a passport. The status of the mother, if she disappears somewhere, is also unclear. This case that is pending in the Penang High Court involves three children. I think they are 8, 9, and 11 years old. And their mother, I've had a sight of their birth certificates, which has, for each of the child, the passport number of the mother is different, even though is said to hold an Indonesian passport. So you have to really go into the facts to establish what is the real position of the mother. The fact that you hold a passport may not be definitive, may not be conclusive as to your citizenship rights. So these kind of situations have to be examined quite thoroughly by the courts instead of ruling them on the basis of affidavits that are presented and a law that is plucked out in relation to the rights of, say, Indonesian or Thai national, from Wikipedia or from the internet and so on. This is to be established by fact. Because even assuming you are a citizen of another country, the mother is a citizen of another country, it does not follow logically that an illegitimate child will have a status that will follow the mother. We do not know. All this has to be explored very carefully.
But Parliament is the one that creates and amends the laws, you know, not the judiciary. So you're basically asking for a change in this sort of... I mean, is that what you're kind of advocating for?
Well, two things. I think the courts also can take this into account because there is a High Court decision, the Apex Court in Australia, for example, where the father was convicted of a crime, drug crime, and required to be deported from the country. And then a lawyer took up his case on the basis of the child, because if he was deported and his mother was living in Australia with the child, then he would be denied the rights to have access to the father. So the court ruled that there was a legitimate expectation, because Australia was a party to the Convention on the Right of the Child, that in their consideration, they had to take into account the government agency in charge of deportation and so on, the paramount interests of the child. So there are a variety of ways and approaches that can be done to deal with this kind of situation. What I'm suggesting is, A, the courts have to look at it in a kind of full-blown issue, as opposed to a linear issue, almost mathematical. He's this, he's not this, and therefore he's equal to this. Because there is a very serious social dimension to this. And courts can take social dimensions into account and look at the policy and, you know, and so on and so forth. And also, if, for example, they find, after doing all that, that there is, they hit a wall. They can't be more creative than when exploring the intent of the legislature. Then perhaps they could signal some kind of possibility of a change. You know, courts often do, not often, but courts have done that, where they say, well, this requires a change in the law, and the law, a change should be desirable or not desirable. They're entitled in passing to make a recommendation of sorts.
So, I mean, this also, like you said, it all boils down to the child. You're leaving the child open to all sorts of, you know, I mean, potential abuse, right? Because I think stateless children, it's been shown from cases that they are very prone to, or they are very susceptible to child trafficking, for example, and all sorts of other social ills. Because like you said, they have no access to education and healthcare and, you know, all the basic rights that we as Malaysians are afforded.
Yes, of course. I mean, this is, the child is just, you know, not entitled to anything. So what does a child do in that situation? As he matures, he becomes completely helpless and goes into a sense of despair. There's nobody who can reach out to him except the father, but the father cannot do much. When he reaches, his education is in a staccato style. Some ministry, some court, some jurisdictions might accept, some states might accept them into schools. Many don't, like in the case of these three children. You know, they've gone in for a term and then they've been asked to leave, and then sometimes they've been taken in again. I mean, this is...
Where's the continuity, right?
Yeah, there's no stability. Continuity. And then when they become, when they grow up and they can't get jobs because you need citizenship, they can't go into private schools because the parents are usually, you know, marginalized or not that well off to afford private international schools and so on. So, you know, they are really caught in a real gray area, a very sad gray area.
So let's say a child has been abandoned by both their parents. How would his or her citizenship be processed typically, if at all?
No, someone has to initiate this process, and perhaps...
So say they were adopted.
If adopted, there are also some complications with regard to adoption too, because these same provisions apply with regard to adoption as well. So they again go on this basis that, you know, if he's adopted, was he born within wedlock or outside of wedlock? If he's outside of wedlock, the same problems will attach. If he's born within wedlock, then they'll have to ascertain the status of the father at the time of the birth, and then decide accordingly. So there is a plethora of problems that are going to be that need to be addressed quite urgently, because this class, I think, is growing. You know.
So, I mean, what are the other implications for a child who is illegitimate? I mean, besides all of this, is there anything else that will come to affect them if they are, well, branded illegitimate? If your parents are not married, you're considered illegitimate, right? What other sort of, I guess, problems will they face?
Well, I think all kinds of social problems, because they are left virtually on a dung heap, if you like, you know. Mm-hmm. And they'll have a father, but the father cannot do very much for the child, because what can he do? You know, he cannot put them through school. He can perhaps go through political parties, who can take up his cause. But then again, you know, when they come to get, you need an IC. I mean, very basic is you need an IC. You don't have a blue IC, then that's the end of the line for you for anything from the most mundane to the most advanced facility that you want to access.
But then the law and the constitution are clear, right? So, you know, what rationale is there for a judge to rule in favour of, let's say, granting them Malaysian citizenship?
Well, you know, like, to some extent, their hands are tied. right? Because if the provision of the law is very clear, like happened in the Court of Appeal decision, then they are bound by that law itself. But, you know, our apex court is in a position to shape remedies, you see, to look at the situation as it arises. And our constitution was bequeathed to us in 1957. And our courts have been very clear that it is an evolving, it's a dynamic, it's a living constitution. So we cannot look at always at a 21st century problem through a 20th century lens, as it were. And so there is scope always for the final court, the apex court, to begin to look at it afresh to see whether there is, through the law, any remedy that could be shaped to deal somewhat with this. Even if they make a recommendation that this child ought to be, for example, registered as a citizen, or that his application for registration should receive a facilitative or a positive nod from the authorities itself. Now, that itself will pave the way for rights to begin to accrue to this group of people, so that there is a kind of pronouncement that because we can't do this, but because of the social web of problems that arise, that then they are entitled to some form of relief that the court can put their touch to, can sanction, for example, you know.
So you mentioned that we are party to the Convention of Rights of Children, albeit with some reservations. How much weight does an international law like this carry in our courts, if at all?
Well, up to this point, actually, it has not carried much weight, I'm afraid, because they say that, you know, until that law is adopted into our jurisprudence as an act of parliament, for example, then it cannot be considered, which is fair enough because there's separation of powers, because treaties are done by the executive, and they cannot override what the legislature, what parliament would want to enact. They're not legally binding until they are adopted as a specific law in this country or through an existing law. There is scope for it to be accepted as the provision to be accepted, the international treaty provision to be accepted, which seems to be the prevailing position. But there is scope, as I said, because we are a treaty which has recognized that it is of critical importance to consider in all situations the paramount interests of the child, then the expectation, this raises a legitimate expectation of a person, of a citizen, or of anyone who wants to move the court, that the authorities under the government, right, which has already entered into this treaty, will take this factor into account. So at the very least, there is a legitimate expectation for the authorities, for example, the registration department, to consider this fact when making a decision and to incorporate somehow, shape a remedy or some kind of relief for the child, to show that they have in fact taken into account the interests of the child more than anything else. So this is a legitimate expectation. This argument has been accepted by the highest court in Australia. That, you know, as I think I told you, with regard to a person who was convicted, he was to be deported, and then but his wife would remain in deported. I think to Malaysia. It was a drug conviction, either to Malaysia or to Singapore. And then a case was launched to say that because the mother and the child would remain in Australia, and the authorities, the deportation authorities, immigration authorities, had not taken this fact into account. Therefore, the decision to deport him was rendered invalid because they failed to take this fact into account. There also, Australia was a party to an international treaty. So the argument is on the basis of a legitimate expectation. So, I mean, this is the kind of areas in which the courts can begin to have maneuverability when they see a problem that has clear social dimensions which can cause serious problems to children, for example.
So the case that's going to happen next week in the Penang High Court, are those three children currently being allowed to go to school? Are they, you know, what sort of rights do they have at the moment?
Well, you know, they were allowed to go to school for a short while, and then they were stopped from going to school. And so, you know, they function on a very intermittent basis, you know, it's up to the discretion. But it's very clear they're not entitled as of right to education, because that in our constitution is only for citizens. So, I mean, you know, the first, they are not allowed. Even if they are allowed, they are allowed on a very short basis, and then they are not allowed. This is disruptive of children who already are facing problems of a broken marriage. Parents, you know, have left them in the lurch, for example, except for the father, or maybe the parents of the father. So these are social problems that need to be addressed on a rather urgent basis.
So, you know, the Deputy Home Minister, Dato' Noor Jazlan, he was reportedly saying that parents should register their child within 2 months of their birth to secure automatic citizenship. Otherwise, the child might have to go through the permanent resident route. Is this typical of nationality laws in developed countries?
Well, I think it is. But here we have a peculiar problem in relation to children born out of wedlock. This is the problem. You see, in other countries, for example, there is you can have a common law marriage. And this was indeed the position before our law reform, Marriage Law Reform Act was enacted. So this is the position with regard to other countries as well. But the problem arises with regard to children born out of wedlock. Now, our other laws, for example, we have a Child Act and so on. Other laws require illegitimate children, for example, to maintenance by the parents or any one of the parents. There are laws that allow for that specifically. So they have indeed addressed the problem of illegitimate children, you know, in other contexts, especially with regard to parental duties. So this has to be brought in line with if there is an obligation to maintain a child and the law recognizes that, then there must also be a co-committant right under the Constitution to be entitled to be a citizen by operation of law. If the mother has disappeared into the wilderness and it cannot be established with any great certainty really what nationality she is, and or whether or not, even if there can be proved to be some nationality, what are the rights of the illegitimate child vis-a-vis the mother?
You can't just, you know, expect the child to disappear into oblivion like the mother, you know, and not grant the poor child any rights just because the mother has disappeared, right?
Yes, I mean, this is a very serious problem. He disappears from the landscape completely. He's a non-person. You know, he can't get an IC, he can't get a passport, he can't get a job, he can't get education. So can you imagine the vulnerability of this group of children, you know, especially in this day and age when we are talking about human trafficking, we are talking about terrorism, we are talking about all kinds of other dimensions to problems that are being created by vulnerable, susceptible minds, you know. So I think there is a need to look at it in a holistic way and look at these problems that could arise, and the government should actually begin to address this on a rather urgent basis.
And just to conclude, and just for you to reiterate, how would you suggest we amend our citizenship law?
Now, first is, I want to stress the fact that to a large extent, we have created the problem, right? The government created the problem because it has allowed in a large number of immigrants. It has also allowed in a large, not allowed in, but there is also the presence of a large amount of illegal immigrants. Then there is a process whereby they're being legitimized. Now, they would not have gone, these people who are legitimized after the event, after they're coming to the country, they would not dare to go to any registration department to have their citizenship or whatever registered. So that is out of the question, right? Because, you know, and then they'll be caught out and so on. So this is a problem that has been created to some extent, and I use the word rather loosely, you know, not to make any adverse comments, has been created by the situation in this country for which the government must accept some form of responsibility or at least a duty to address this particular situation. When it comes to courts, courts are restricted somewhat by the existing provisions. And so they try their best within the framework to address this problem. So if you want to amend, we have to amend the federal constitution, for example. to say that where a child would be denied all kinds of facilities as a result of the fact, if as a result of the mother leaving disappearing and having no rights whatsoever, disappearing and it becoming difficult to, and if the child is habitually has been brought up in this country and continues to be brought up, and there is clear evidence of that fact, then if he would then not have any rights, then he should be allowed to become a citizen by operation of law. And it's quite easy to amend that. And I think this will be a bipartisan consensus on this particular issue of all parties, because once the social dimension is made clear, then I think they would be quite happy to promote this solution to this kind of problem.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking to lawyer Dr. Gudiel Singh Nijia. Thank you for listening. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.